The coronavirus is the biggest threat this country has faced for decades.
We have asked everyone in Wales to make changes in the way we live our lives.
Stay at home during this pandemic.
Welcome to Journos in Lockdown,
a podcast created by trainee broadcast journalists who are learning to report in a global pandemic.
As we've not been able to go out and meet journalists, we've decided to bring them to you and ask them what challenges coronavirus has brought them
and what the future of journalism might look like.
Welcome to Journos in Lockdown. I'm Niamh Doyle. A fortnight ago, I interviewed Laura Garcia, co-founder of PressPad UK and author of First Draft News. We spoke about life as lockdown restrictions start to ease, what aspiring journalists should do to stand out to employers, and how journalism has evolved under lockdown restrictions. Here is the full episode. Thank you, Laura Garcia, for joining us for Journos in Lockdown.
My pleasure.
So firstly, how are you and how have you been coping during lockdown?
Oh, I'm all right. I can't believe it is day 100 for me today. I just looked at my calendar this morning of being in lockdown. I felt ill kind of like a week before government mandated lockdown. So I started staying home from then. So I've been doing it for a little while longer than everybody else. But other than that, we're all right.
So how has coronavirus impacted your role as co-founder of PressPad and author of First Draft News? And what's a regular working day like for you now?
Oh my God. So I've had to completely reinvent everything that I do, how I work, and particularly for PressPad, the work that we do has completely changed. So we were very excited to have a bunch of people lined up to do internships from like March, April, June. Summer is a really busy time for us because that's when people get lots of work experience and internships, and everyone's placements got cancelled. All of our hosts started getting in touch with us to say, actually, you know what? I don't think I can take someone in my house right now for different reasons and legitimate concerns, right? We had to just stop and pivot 180 degrees and think, if the main way that we support up and coming journalists, it's by giving them accommodation, and that's not going to be a thing soon, what is it that we can do? Because it's such a scary, weird, confusing time to be either graduating or trying to get into the industry when everything's locked down and when everything is so uncertain. And that uncertainty is the worst part, right? If we knew what things were going to look like for the next year, I think it'd be a little bit easier. Between myself and Olivia Krellen, who's the founder of PressPad, we came up with the idea for PressPad Remote. So doing a bunch of online events and trying to give people as much support and one-on-one attention to get them ready to use this time in lockdown to prep everything that they need to apply for jobs. What normally tends to happen, I used to teach at a university and I would always see my students around this time of year. They're trying to finish their exams, brush up their portfolio, apply for jobs, make their CV, spruce up their LinkedIn, make a website, do all the things at the same time. And if any tiny silver linings come out of lockdown is that it's given people a little bit more time to do this separately. And for First Draft, I mean, the biggest change has been that I'm not going into the office anymore. So I live in Kent in the southeast and I'd have to train in and out every day. And now I don't, which is another tiny silver lining, not being on train loads. But the work that we do of monitoring and verifying disinformation is very much online. My work for First Draft, if anything, hasn't changed. It's just gotten way busier. And I think it's also reminded us that disinformation doesn't just live in the political sphere. And it's where it had been, or where people thought it'd be a lot of times before. So it's about particular politicians or parties or voting, when really it's been there in everything. There's disinformation around fashion, around health, around parenting, around faith, around the environment, around politics, around culture. It's made my life a continuous sequence of Zoom webinars, trying to teach people the stuff that we've been doing at First Draft for a really long time.
Yeah, I mean, it's challenged so many people to be creative because there's no other option. It's how many kind of ideas you can come up with that you didn't think you'd be able to do. And it's amazing that this pandemic has caused us to do that. And it's quite interesting, really. So has your advice to journalists completely changed because of coronavirus? And is it more difficult giving advice when you're aware that different parts of the UK are in different stages of lockdown?
No, I don't think the advice that I give is any different. If anything, one of the other very few silver linings of lockdown and coronavirus is that I think it's become a little bit of an equalizing force. Things that we would have never considered before in journalism are now everyday occurrences. So my background is in television production, and I remember my bosses would outright refuse doing Skype interviews on our television shows, unless it was Tim Peake in space, right? Unless it was something that really required for something to be a Skype Skype interview. If people were not able to come into the studio to talk to us, we were not interested. And that, in a way, blocked out a bunch of different diverse voices of people who did not live in London or maybe had caring responsibilities so they couldn't come into the studio at a specific time. And coronavirus has shown us that actually you can make television from people's living rooms. Our phones are better. There's ways to do it with technology. If you think about it a little bit and approach it in the same way as you would producing a normal interview, you can get actually high quality sound, high quality backgrounds, really engaging conversations going on. And I think something very similar is going to happen, hopefully, with access to work experience and internships and even jobs. A lot of people are starting to hire or offer opportunities that you can do remote. So the whole, well, if you're not in London, you don't have access to the best opportunities argument is going to be less of an argument, I hope. This is really my hope. And I've started to see glimmers of it happening here and there. And I think that is something that young people can use to their advantage, at least right now, to say, look, you just need someone who knows how to do the job and has a decent internet connection because no one's in your office and I can be that person. And again, it's a very small silver lining considering the massive impacts and consequences of coronavirus. But then it means that everything else, all previous advice applies, right? About how you make your work really easy to find, about how you need to be really clear with people about what your ambitions are so they know how to help you, about how you apply for a job and think really thoroughly about how your cover letter and your CV and your LinkedIn and your Twitter profile all build an online brand for yourself. And the digital personas that we perform on social are now more important than ever because chances are they're the first and the most important way that people are going to interact with you if you're looking to get a job.
So what have you found aspiring journalists have been struggling with the most during lockdown?
I think it's been a really difficult time for anybody trying to get into the industry because getting into journalism was hard before. Or the process of how to do it was really obscure before, and this has just made it worse. And especially for people who are maybe finishing university or some sort of prep course or their NCTJs, it was already a time of huge flux. It's when you're finishing your exams, your coursework, you're trying to figure out what to do, you're trying to figure out your voice, where you're going. And this just added an extra layer of, actually, you know what, the world is on hold and we're not exactly sure when it's going to come back. And I think it's that uncertainty added on top of what was already a big period of transition and flux that made it worse. And we're not necessarily taught how to deal with uncertainty, right? And I think this is changing with younger generations. But for example, when I grew up, the plan was really clear, right? You go to school, you get a job, you progress in that job, and then your life is sorted. My parents had never had a conversation with me about how do you deal when you don't know what the next step is. And that's the hard part. And it also closed off one of the biggest ways that people get their first foot in the industry, which are internships and work experience. For many of us, that's the first way that we get to be in the newsroom, that we get to meet people, that we get to make those professional connections that will carry us through the rest of our career. And when that door is so unequivocally closed, that can be really scary in what was already a scary job market to try and get into.
As lockdown restrictions are easing across the UK, have you seen working life gradually turn back to how it used to be? Or are there significant differences in the way you work now that's been solely the result of having to adapt because of coronavirus?
I think it's played out a little bit differently for First Draft and the work that I do there at PressPad. So with First Draft, we know we're not going back into any kind of office until at least September. Lockdown or no lockdown or easing restrictions or no easing restrictions, my work is still kind of the same. I wake up, have a shower, get out of my pajamas, and then sit down at home to do a day's work around 7 or 8 when I'm done because I have really long days. I make dinner and I'm still at home, but I'm not at work anymore. So for that, it's not going to change. For PressPad, I think it's given us a lot more flexibility because we were all at home and we're not commuting and we're not spending our time doing these things that we'd otherwise would be. It's given us a time to connect more as a team and to find times when we can be with each other and discuss things or prep or run events. And I think that's something we're going to definitely carry forward. I 100% think that there's things that are going to change. We can't go back to the same working structures as before. I think newsrooms are a little bit different than other industries because some of the work that we do does imply being together with each other, particularly, for example, for broadcast, right? And then the people who have been doing the news nonstop throughout lockdown, that's why they're key workers. Because if you're going to make a TV show, you still need a camera person, you still need a director, you still need a gallery operator, you still need your presenter to be there. But for all the rest of us, who maybe were a little bit frustrated that for journalists, we spent all of our time in an office rather than outside talking to people, I think we're going to have serious discussions around flexible working and digital commuting. And maybe it's not a 5 day a week everyone works from home now, but maybe you do it 2 days a week, particularly for people with caring responsibilities, with children who commute from far away. And I really hope we use it as a force to equalize and to make our workplaces more flexible for people who have different work availabilities. It's one of the big reasons why, for example, even though more or less the same amount of men and women go into broadcast, particularly, which is where I have most of my experience, but the moment you get to kind of like deputy editor or editor, it tends to be more men than women, because it's around the time when people have families and women take the brunt of caring responsibilities and can't work 14-hour shifts 5 days a week anymore, right? We've been shown that there are other ways of working, that we can digitally commute, that there is stuff that we can do from home, that we can work at different hours. I really hope we take this as an opportunity to really reinvent how we do things, to allow for the difference that newsrooms have been needing desperately for such a long time.
With the accommodation that PressPad sets people for those who have been accepted into work experience in London, for example, how do you intend to continue to accommodate people safely? And what changes have you made to this process?
We're definitely planning for a future where we can keep hosting people and bringing those connections. We're working really hard on building a really fancy, cool website, kind of like Airbnb style, where a lot of the process is going to be more automated. Currently, when we were hosting people before, I was doing it manually with a spreadsheet of who our signed up hosts were and trying to find the right person to match them with, which was just mad because it depended on how much free time I had, how many people we could help. We are 100% working on this website that is going to help us do things a lot quicker, that is going to have more safety features built in, like people are going to have DBS checks and pictures of their home. We don't want any interns that end up sleeping under staircases, kind of like Harry Potter style, all that kind of stuff we're thinking about. But if I'm honest, this is with our 2021 hat on. Currently now we're super, super, super focused on what else we can help to do remotely and digitally to support people who are trying to get into the industry now, and waiting to see how things evolve and what the government advice and the World Health Organization's advice is going to be when things seem like they're starting to get back to normal. And then we'll definitely obviously pay attention to that advice and come up with our own set of guidelines of what our hosts or interns are going to be expected to do. The complicated thing is that having someone stay with you brings with it a lot of different risks. If we're thinking about it in coronavirus time, especially if you have a family or you are in touch with parents who are a little bit on the older side, and all of those things are things that our hosts have highlighted to say that it's been on their mind since kind of March 23rd when we started proper lockdown, and we're having conversations with them to try and figure out what the future looks like. But if I'm deadly honest, this is the future in 2021, not anytime sooner.
No, that's fair enough. I mean, you've got so much on your plate already to kind of juggle. Finding places for people to stay, I mean, it's not realistic at the moment because organisations aren't looking for people to do work experience. So for aspiring journalists applying for jobs, which most are starting to do now that restrictions are starting to ease, how do you suggest they get their foot in the door without waiting for jobs to drop? And how should we be contacting people?
So for aspiring journalists, I think this is a time to sit back, prep all of your stuff, really own the digital footprint that you have online so that it speaks with one voice, so that it is one whole brand, and that it is really easy to find, because that is going to really increase your chances of getting a job or getting work experience or getting your foot in the door. There are a lot of people starting to think about digital work experiences and also think about how you could maybe do these for places abroad that would have never been an option before because of cost or because of visa restrictions. So for example, if you've ever wanted to work for NPR in the US, they're still running their summer podcast internship. And because it's remote, anybody in wherever in the world can do it, right? And those opportunities are starting to crop up and they're still there. And I think in terms of how do you get your foot in the door, things like this really help, because having a body of work that is easy to find, that actually proves that you can do what you say you can do. Journalism is like riding a bike. I don't care that you say that you can ride a bike. Until I see you ride a bike, I'm not going to believe it. Which is why, for example, the grades that you get at uni don't matter as much as your portfolio. I don't care what your grades were. Maybe one day you were off and doing an exam. What I want to see is your published work. And published doesn't have to be published by like a super serious national news outlet. It can be your own blog. It can be the stuff that you run during your production days or your news days at uni. It is stuff that is available to find on the internet that proves that you can do the job, to time, to pressure, to find different sources, to work across multimedia spectrums, to use different storytelling styles, whether it's on social versus on a website versus video. And that is the most important thing that you can have, because that's what people are going to see. It's going to be your calling card. And when it comes to contacting people, I would just do a bunch of Zoom stuff. I've been in one same week on a Zoom call with Christina Lam, who is the Sunday Times foreign correspondent and like my absolute hero, and the former president of Mexico. I mean, granted, it wasn't like a one-on-one call, but I was in a Zoom meeting with them, right? Where you can actually ask questions and meet people. Zoom is the great equalizer. We're all dealing with the same stuff. We're all easier to find. You can still network by attending these events and finding people on Twitter and maybe DMing them and being like, hey, I was at your thing. It was really cool. Just like you would offline. So think about what would you do if you had the chance to physically go to like a drinks event, a network, and then translate into the digital world. And I'm sure it will still work.
So a few of my lecturers have been saying that the next stereotypical interview question won't be, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? But instead will be, how did you stay creative during lockdown? As someone who knows what employers look for, what do you think aspiring journalists like myself should be doing to stay active amongst their work? And how would they stand out for employers?
This, anything, all of it. Playing around with technology, experimenting, cutting yourself some slack as well, right? I think because we're all at home, it kind of feels like we're off work when we're really not. We're at home during a global crisis, and that means that we'll have ups and downs. I have days when I'm just like completely drained of energy and there's nothing can motivate me in the world. But then there's other days where I kind of try and cheer myself up and get up to it. This is the time to experiment, to try things, to do this kind of stuff, to figure out ways of telling stories, to prove that your digital skills are there. And it doesn't have to mean that you have to completely succeed at everything. I think we misunderstand how much we learn through experimenting and how much pressure we put on ourselves to succeed for others more than for ourselves. I don't want to be one of those people who say, if out of lockdown you didn't write a book, learn a language, run a blog, and also become perfect at baking sourdough bread, then you've completely failed, because that's not it. Like, that's 100% not it. But I do think if you're someone interested in journalism, your spidey senses should be off the hook right now, burning to tell the story of what is clearly history happening around us, and the stories of your community and the people around you and the communities and the niche topics that you're interested in. That fire inside that is making you go, oh my God, I really wish I could do it. Follow through on that. Even if it fails, even if what you produce at the end doesn't work, because that fire is the most important thing, and having the guts to follow through with it, because that's the journalistic sense and knows that we can't teach you. I can teach you how to write better. I can teach you how to shoot better. I can teach you how to edit. But if you don't have that little nagging voice in the back of your head and then the follow through with it, that's a really hard thing to teach someone. And I would be looking for that in a year's time, right? It's not so much how did you succeed, it's what did you try and what did you learn from it? What did you give yourself the chance to try, and how did that make your reporting better, or what are you going to take forward with you? And maybe that is starting a weird TikTok account to teach yourself how to use it, or doing a podcast, or trying to learn a little bit of coding, if only to understand how Python works or how HTML works. And I think that's it. It's more about what did you try? Nothing wrong with trying. It always teaches us something. There's people doing really interesting stuff with, for example, Emma Bentley, who's a cameraman for the BBC. She does little TikTok tutorials of how she's filming now. And she's coming up with really interesting ways of filming people interviewing other people on Zoom, or telling stories about social distancing. And any kind of mobile journalism skills that you have are now more important than ever, right? So can you self-shoot? And there are interesting ways to tell these stories. And there are, I mean, it's hard and it takes time and it takes practice, but you can figure out ways of filming yourself doing things. And our phones are cameras, and that is something that makes this kind of work easier more than if you already know how to do it, which is an important part of the process, where I'm guessing a lot of, say, older or more experienced journalists right now, I've had 3 months of a crash course of how to try and self-shoot and use their mobile phones to record, when people like you guys, that's kind of embedded into your DNA, kind of the things that you already do. And to your point about like whether sources are easier to find now because everyone's at home, I think that's such an important and interesting part of the kind of work that we're doing now, because even Louis Theroux, for example, has launched a podcast called Grounded, where he's interviewing all the famous people that have never had time for him before, just because they're too busy. Not because they didn't want to, but they were just like impossibly busy. And now he gets to chat with them for about an hour and make a podcast out of it, right? And or you're getting people's direct cell phones. I heard an interview on another BBC podcast of some of like an entertainment correspondent who was going to interview Katy Perry about her new album coming out. And before, you would never get her mobile phone directly. You get like the handler's phone who then forwards the call, who forwards the call, who forwards the call, and eventually you speak to Katy Perry. But now, because Katy Perry's stuck at home, she rang him directly from her cell phone. How much that's going to change our relationship with our sources, with how we consider who we can speak to, how the kind of stories that we can tell. So can we do a little bit of foreign corresponding from the comfort of our own home? Because nobody can go anywhere anyway and speak to people on the other side of the world. And how we can use that to inform our reporting in a way that is more inclusive and more equitable, I think is really important. And the thing about new social platforms like TikTok is that if you're not following the trends and technology as it emerges and as it grows, it kind of feels like TikTok came out of nowhere. But TikTok did not come out of nowhere. TikTok has been around for a really long time. And most importantly, it builds on previous visual storytelling styles, for example, like Vine. So looped GIFs or Instagram stories and Snapchat that uses vertical frame by frame storytelling. And as journalists, it's in particularly in broadcast, we have to start thinking about broadcast more about screens than about television and how that translates to tablets and mobile phones and the screens that we're going to have around our lives everywhere and how keeping up with the platforms is not about being a cool kid and being on them. It's more about understanding the storytelling language as it develops, because it's a very participatory way of developing storytelling. TikTok evolves with its content creators the same way that Instagram provides new tools that it feels or it sees that its users are starting to use, the way that Twitter reacts to how people, for example, hashtags were not a Twitter invention, it was a user invention. After the earthquake in Haiti, when people were trying to find each other and kind of keep tracks of the NGOs that were on the ground. And as journalists, we have to be part of that process. Otherwise, we're not going to understand the language that people are speaking online. And therefore, we're not going to be able to tell stories that speak to them. And that is hugely, hugely important. And then it gets professionalized and commercialized. So for example, to take TikTok's example, there is now a vertical television service like Netflix called Quibi, but you can watch up to 10-minute TV episodes professionally made, and it doesn't matter whether you're holding your phone vertically or horizontally, you're supposed to be able to see it. The framing's supposed to be perfect. So as a television producer, that is such an interesting challenge. How do I shoot things in a way that is engaging and informative and arresting and keep it to 10 minutes and also make the framing work for vertical and horizontal? Which is just mad, right? But the more that we play around with these things, the better that we're going to get at telling stories. And not just younger people, like there's tons of people that are on TikTok and that have been on TikTok for a really long time. And I think in news, we tend to associate short with lack of depth or lack of professionalism, right? Unless you're reading a 10,000 word piece or half an hour documentary, you're not really getting the news. When I think there's a real challenge in telling stories in a really quick and short way, using tons of different layers, without losing that depth. And I think there are ways to do it. It's just something that we're not necessarily super used to doing anymore. But on TikTok particularly, and the same on Instagram stories and on other platforms, you have layers, right? It's the video plus the tags that you can use. Maybe the music adds a layer of meaning. The effects can also add to the storytelling. And all of those elements together combined can actually convey quite a lot of information in 60 seconds if you know how to do it right. And that's kind of the challenge, right? It's breaking out of the old, oh, well, this is what things are supposed to be, and be like, no, hold on a second. Maybe that's what it was, but it's not necessarily what it still has to be. And there are new ways of telling stories in an equally informative way, maybe with compliments, right? And trying to think about something called transmedia storytelling. So how do you tell stories across different platforms and screens that all complement each other? So maybe TikTok is your gateway drug almost, to then take you to read something a little bit longer on Instagram, and then eventually you end up reading an explainer on a website, and that's okay, right? And that's fine. One of my favorite quotes by Ira Glass, who is a radio journalist in the States, he talks about this myth that we've created around people who create stuff like journalists, where the first time you do it, it has to be perfect, right? And we forget that the best artists, the best musicians, the best athletes all fail quite a lot before they get to be perfect. Or we only see the latest version, right? Even with photographers, for example, you only see the best shot that is chosen out of 50 and how you have to do the work to get better at it. And your first work is never going to be as good as you hear it in your head. So your ideas are always going to be amazing, but you need to practice to be able to get your production skills and your storytelling skills to match what's in your head. And that is only a matter of time, and that is only a question of practice. And using this time to do that now is more important than ever. One of the things that I really think that young journalists could do during this time of lockdown is teach themselves online verification skills, because it's something that we don't necessarily teach at university. I didn't used to teach it that much when I used to teach it at the University of Kent. So that means whenever you find something on social media, number one, it's becoming really good at finding things on social. So Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, Snapchat, WhatsApp groups, all of them. And number two is, once you've found it, how do you verify that it is what it says it is? How do you verify that the account is a real person? How do you verify that the video is actually from the place it says it is? How do you verify that it's from this year rather than from last year before you put it on national television, right? And all of those things are skills, just like everything that you can practice, and that we teach at First Draft, and we have some free online courses that you can access. But it's a thing that's going to make you stand out to employers, because universities and kind of training courses have been a little bit slow to embed these skills into our training. Nevertheless, it's such a crucial part of the work that we do in newsrooms now. And that ends up falling to young people, because we assume, oh, you're under the age of 30, therefore you are a whiz kid at technology. Can you tell me whether this Twitter account is actually from, I don't know, Malaysia, where there's just been a tsunami? And if you don't know how to do that, you're going to struggle.
And lastly, do you think coronavirus has changed future ways of broadcasting?
Yes. In a sentence, yes. And shame on us if it hasn't. I think that's the biggest one. Shame on us if in a year's time we go back to how we were doing things before. Because if you watch television, there's more women on TV. There's more people of color on television. There's more people from outside of London on television. There's more people who are different able-bodied on television, because everyone's at home, because we can reach everybody. Interviews are so much richer for the variety of experts that are being interviewed on TV. I'm not saying it's perfect. There's still a long way to go, but shame on us if this doesn't change how we make television in the future.
Thank you so much, Laura. Thank you. And best of luck. Bye. Thank you. A huge thank you to Laura for joining us for this episode. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter. We're at Journos in Lockdown. Thanks for listening.